From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 29th day of May 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Well, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, for the second time this week, has raised the ire of the agricultural community with the proposed RFS this time around. We'll hear analysis of the renewable fuel standard from Scott Irwin, U of I Ag Economist. We'll also hear today from Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting and Ben Pruess of the Andersons, along with the weather forecast, that with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute, as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, futures in the corn pit were down 2 cents in the July at 351.5, September at 357.25, down 2.25, and December corn down 2 cents at $3.68. The March at 378.5, down 2 as well. Next year's July down 2.5 at 391. July beans at $9.34, a gain today up 8 cents. August at 919.25, up a nickel. September 907.75, 4.5 higher, and November beans at 905.75, up 3.75. January at 912.75, 3.75 higher. July soybean meal, a gain of 90 cents at 305.70 on the settlement price. The August on out were a bit lower. Bean oil was up $1.27 in the July at $33.33. Soft red winter wheat down $11.03 around, down 11.75 cents at 477, and the Kansas City hard red at 498.75, down 11.5. Livestock finished the nearby live cattle a dollar lower at 152.50 in the June. August at 151.52.5. It finished down a dollar 22.5. Feeder cattle at 223.25, $1.92.5 lower in the August. September at $221.82.5, down a dollar 42.5. And the June contract in the lean hog 62.5 cents lower at $83.97.5. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647. Or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking the outside markets at this hour, July crude oil at $60.18 a barrel, up $2.15 for the day. The U.S. the heating oil at $1.94.06, that's 7.6 cents higher, and the gasoline for the day at $2.02 is 9.7 cents higher. Natural gas finished at 5.8 cents lower. It's still trading actually at $2.64.8. Ethanol futures, they are finished trading for the day as U.S. EPA released the numbers. They settled a penny and 2 cents lower at $1.53.03. Dow Jones Industrial Average about 137 points down at 17,997. New York gold at $1,191 up $2.25, and the U.S. dollar at 96.98. That's down 0.079 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Scattered showers, some thunderstorms yet this afternoon. Mostly cloudy, a high of 86. A south-southwest wind at about 14 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation in the area set at just 40% for this afternoon. Tonight, those will continue but increase it to the 80% level with a low of 66 degrees. And then tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are quite likely. Chance of rainfall set at 70%. It'll be cloudy in the area with a 74-degree high. Mostly cloudy on Saturday night. We'll go down to 48 degrees. It will be breezy and partly sunny on Sunday with a 67-degree high. We'll check more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour with Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening, of course, to the closing market report on this 29th day of May. It's a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo joins us from Atchison, Kansas, and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting to discuss what happened for the week and the day in the marketplace. Thanks, Mike, so much for being with us. How are you this afternoon?
Great to be with you, Todd. It's a soggy, wet Friday afternoon here in eastern Kansas, and more and more fellows are talking about skipping out of the corn planting and just going into beans whenever they can get a shot. So they're very much eager to see this warmer, drier pattern develop late next week that the models are really pushing at this point.
If that is the case, would it follow the thoughts you've had on acreage for a while? And I don't know whether that's really the case or not, whether you're thinking fewer corn acres and more bean acres.
Yeah, I think so. I think the acreage number in my mind is mostly set up plus or minus 300,000 or 400,000 either way. I think probably the biggest feature to this, if this weather market develops as advertised with a warmer, drier scenario, that's exactly what the doctor ordered for the majority of the Midwest and Western Corn Belt especially, and even clients in Indiana and up in the northern Illinois areas and over into Minnesota and southern Wisconsin could use some rains at this point as a general rule of thumb. And so there are certainly areas that don't want any more rain, but I think the vast majority of the Corn Belt and the way the trade in the futures market's looking at it, they would be probably looking at a warmer, drier trend as more conditions to get a crop that has started out slow to jump because of increased heating degree units, and probably would look upon that as fairly bearish. So as we close out the week, as we close out the month, especially when we look at the wheat and the dollar trade and how they've worked in conjunction with each other, I think almost all arrows point to the wheat and the dollar being the first domino that needs to fall in order to get a price change and a trend change in the grains as a whole.
Have you taken a look at the charts to see what you can see in the monthlies as we've closed out now June?
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting because last week we really flirted in the dollar with dethroning the dollar technically and creating a sell signal by taking it down to levels not seen since January. That move down failed this week, and as we close out the month, we have been able to regain 96.50 in the dollar index. And if you look at the separation of the weekly and monthly closes for wheat, corn, and beans, especially the wheat, you see a big divergence because if we would have had last week's close in July wheat at 5.15 and a quarter, we would have been up sharply in the month of May. In fact, we would have probably had a 9% gain on the month for the wheat market, Todd. Instead, we closed at 4.77. That compares to the April 30th close of 474, so just barely positive on the month. Now, if you look at corn and beans, it looked like it took more of the USDA supply-demand report, where the corn closed down about 4% on the month, beans down about 5% on the month. Again, I think that mid-month report really kind of pushed the reversal of the bean-corn spreading, and that spread, generally speaking, unwound, especially the second and third week of May, and it picked it up again and bought the beans again here the last part of May because of some of the other circumstances that were coming in, namely the wheat pressuring the corn.
Now you've discussed the dollar a great deal over the last several times we've talked. When we look back at that monthly chart for the dollar, we notice that it has closed, or it has gone over the 100 level. In both March and April, though it did not settle above that in either of those months. This month, it settled higher than last, but we didn't go over 100 this month, so not quite as high this month as last month. What are your expectations moving forward? What have we heard from the Fed? What difference does it really make?
June's a much more crucial month because we have talked about the analogous year of 2010, and sure enough, at the end of May, back in the end of May of 2010, Dease corn was about 12 cents where it closed today. November beans only less than 4 cents away from where they closed back on the end of May in 2010. June was a crucial month for allowing the 2010 model year to occur. In other words, a low to be made in late June, early July. In June, we saw the second week of June 2010, the dollar index make a multi-year high and then fall 15% with very little interruption to the downside, roughly 15% by the time we got to the first week of November of 2010. So June becomes a critical, critical month when it comes to the dollar. And I would also say, Todd, it would be that way when it comes to the wheat, because we're getting ready to harvest the hard red wheat, and we're going to be stepping into the combines in the not-too-distant future for the soft red as well. So June's, in, I don't want to say make or break, but I think if you read in between the lines, that's kind of where I'm leading as far as whether that 2010 analogy plays out or not.
And remind us what it was in 2010 that bottomed the market and then began to drive it higher for all of those commodities?
Well, we started with world wheat ending stocks going down. That was the initial kickoff along with the dollar. And then as the dollar broke, we saw a yield decline in the corn. We actually saw a supply-side economic show an increase in the soybeans as far as production in 2010 when we went from, say, June to the August report. But the soybean demand increased substantially, offsetting that supply increase. And so it was a stair-step type mindset that I think could develop this year again, as long as we get that first domino to fall of a dollar high, euro low, a wheat low, and then we could start talking about maybe the ability of the demand to start to pick up. USDA did a heck of a good job in their yesterday's agriculture trade update, in my opinion, talking a lot about the historical and long-term, short-term features of the U.S. dollar and what it does to U.S. agriculture exports. And I think it's very much worth a read for producers.
And where do you find it? Just on the USDA website, is that right?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's at the ERS website, and it would be the Outlook. Just do a Google search for Outlook for U.S. agriculture trade.
All right. One last item we probably ought to take up, livestock in particular, feeder cattle. They had quite a nice little up week, and they finished, I think, the month higher, too.
Yeah, we had a nice move in the feeders, and it was a nice move timing-wise because they had looked pretty vulnerable the first week of May of the month. It's going to be a tough road here for the hogs, I think, because the cattle have on their side very strong weekly exports. In fact, the export sales this week were a marketing year high that were reported today. And domestically, we're eating a lot of ground beef and the sirloin steak, so we're not getting a lot of featuring in the pork. And so I would say I could be patient on hedging cattle, but I'm real eager to get some hogs hedged if we don't see any follow-through back to the upside next week in the August futures in particular.
Okay, thanks so much.
Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting, and one of our panelists on this week's Commodity Week. Jackie Vakes and Merrill Crowley also join us. That program comes up immediately following this one on our home radio station and many other radio stations, and tomorrow morning on many radio stations as well. It's online right now at willag.org if you'd like to go and take a listen to it. Well, as you know by now, U.S. EPA earlier today released its RFS proposal, and it was not well accepted by many in the agricultural industry. I spoke with University of Illinois Scott Irwin earlier today about the proposal and asked him to explain what it does and does not do.
Big news from the EPA, and I would characterize it as a very mixed bag for the U.S. biofuels industry and agricultural groups. Let me start with the good news first. The EPA did propose substantially higher biodiesel mandates and no cuts in the overall level of the advanced component of the mandates after consideration of waivers due to those small volumes of cellulosic that are actually forecast to be produced. So on that side, we were the biofuels industry was successful in addressing some of those concerns. The biodiesel mandate in 2014 is 1.63 billion gallons, and then it goes up 100 million gallons. Well, a little bit less than that. It goes to 1.7 in 2015, 1.8 in 2016. So those are a little bit lower than I was expecting going into it, but only by a few hundred million gallons. So that part of the proposal basically came in at least near what I was expecting, and I think most market participants were expecting, you know, going into the release of this proposal. So that's the good news. The part of the proposal, Todd, that I found, quite frankly, I was shocked by, were the proposed RVOs for the renewable component, which is simply the difference between the total RFS and the advanced RFS. Most people interpret that as the corn-based ethanol mandate for all practical purposes. That's what it is. And the EPA came in at 13.25 billion gallons for 2014, 13.4 billion gallons for 2015, and 14 billion gallons for 2016. Now, on paper, that appears to be consistent with the rhetoric of the EPA in the proposal that this is, in essence, a push for corn-based ethanol relative to their preliminary proposal of November 2013. The volume for 2014 is 13.25 compared to the preliminary proposal, which was 13.01. So you do see rising mandates for corn-based ethanol in the proposal. But the world has changed a lot in the last 18 months. And if you update your expectations based on what we're actually consuming for ethanol, then you get a very different picture of these numbers for corn-based ethanol. Here's the critical numbers, in my opinion. In 2014, and this already occurred, we have the final figures, so we know what these numbers are, the United States consumed, depending on a couple technical details, which number you pick, 13.5 or 13.6 billion gallons of ethanol in our domestic fuel supply. And that could be, that was overwhelmingly would be E10 and a little bit of E15 and E85 thrown in. But that's what we consumed. We know that already. And so I thought that would be the absolute bare bottom minimum of what the RVO would be. And they came in well below that. And I'll have to study the document and see their methodology. But it, so from that, which I think is the proper comparison, you can see why I would regard, from the ethanol standpoint, this is clearly a step backwards, even relative to the incredibly controversial preliminary proposal of November 2013. And now let's look to 2015. For 2015, we know we're started with a base of 13.5 or 13.6 billion gallons, but we know that a lot has changed in the last year. Gasoline prices have dropped by as much as half. So we will naturally get some bounce in total gasoline consumption because of the lower prices. We use a pretty conservative estimate that total gasoline consumption will grow about 3%. That means that a pretty reasonable and even a little conservative estimate of where the effective blend wall will lie in 2015 is around 14 billion gallons. And the EPA's proposed ethanol mandate is only 13.4 billion gallons. That's 600 million gallons less than is what would be a pretty reasonable projection of what we're actually going to use in 2015. And then they do get it up to 14 billion gallons in 2016. But if we stay this low in terms of gasoline prices, which of course is a tough thing to project, we would probably be at least a little bit above 14 billion gallons in 2016. So to me, that's the key way to think about the mandates that the EPA has proposed. they lie well to the left or are less than what we're actually been using, appear to be using now, and are likely to be using in the future. So they will have no impact.
That, of course, was University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin discussing the United States Environmental Protection Agency's latest renewable fuel standards proposal. The rule, once posted to the Federal Register, will be open for public comment through July 27, 2015. I have not yet posted this interview to the willag.org website, but it should go up shortly. Let me summarize this for you very quickly. Essentially, what has happened today is there has been a push for biodiesel usage, and that would be for soybeans and all kinds of vegetable oils under the new proposed rule, and it's just a proposed rule and won't take effect until November if it's enacted as it's put in place. And for ethanol, it essentially swaps what had been the blend wall and the mandate. The mandate has been higher than the blend wall. Now, if this were to take place, the mandate would be lower than the blend wall. It means not much, according to Scott. You heard him say no impact because ethanol is able to compete in the marketplace on its own. However, it would eliminate much of the political push to continue to increase the use of biofuels in the United States at the original congressional mandated levels, and certainly for corn-based ethanol. Now, on the phone line to take up the cash grain market just a bit is Ben Pruce. He's at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa. Thanks for waiting through that explanation. I do appreciate it. Ben, tell me about the marketplace there today.
Oh, sure. You know, just quiet here on the home front, to be honest with you. We have gotten ample rains, got some heat moving through, got a little dip in temperatures here this weekend, but we've been getting some 80-degree weather here. Corn's about 6 inches tall, beans are about 3 or 4 inches tall, and we're just on our way. Guys are just really frozen in the marketplace, not sure what to do, and unfortunately the market's dropped enough to where they're not willing sellers here today, so it's kind of a rock and hard place here in Northwest Iowa.
And your crops, you think, look better this year than they did that last year at this time?
Substantially. Well, yeah, substantially. And on top of that, you just look at just the sheer amount of water that's around, you know, just creeks that have been dry for the last couple of years have, you know, a couple feet of water. And I mean, we just have ample moisture. We've got some nice sun, calling for some moisture next week, but there's warm temperatures and just feels like we're really on our way.
I will not call your area in a deficit area for corn, but you had been shorter than other places. I suppose that remains the case. Do you reflect that in your bids?
No, not at all. You know, there's always been just the sentiment that we had lighter yields. Well, we were afraid that farmers were holding back a certain amount of stocks on the farm. Well, as the market has continued to drop here, quite honestly, we're starting to see just a couple people starting to throw in the towel here just a little bit late May. Basis has actually backed off about 10 cents here at the processor. Just people are just puking corn, saying I'm done, and it's weighing pretty heavy on us here today.
And your bids are what?
We're 331 cash corn, 894 cash beans.
Hey, thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Pruce is at the Andersons in Everly, Iowa, joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
It's National Coco Van Day. Legends trace the French fricassee of rooster dish to ancient Gaul and Julius Caesar, but the earliest written records do not appear until the 20th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1630, Charles II, King of England, was born. Mary Monarch Tea was introduced to England during his reign. On December 23rd of 1675, he issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. But the public response was so negative that he revoked it just over a year later. In 1716, Louise Jean Marie Daubenton was born, a French naturalist and pioneer in several fields, including plant physiology. He also conducted agricultural experiments and introduced Merino sheep to France. In 1855, Sir David Bruce was born. An English bacteriologist, he traced the Malta fever to a bacterium later named for him. Malta fever causes abortion in goats and is usually transmitted by goat's milk. In 1886, Coca-Cola, invented by pharmacist John Pemberton in 1885, was advertised for the first time in the Atlanta Daily. And in 2004, tens of millions of pounds of almonds were recalled by one of the world's largest almond producers, located in California, due to a salmonella outbreak. At least 25 people were sickened in states from Alaska to Michigan. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, the weather forecast from Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. May is shaping up to be warmer and wetter than average. The statewide average temperature was 64.5 degrees. That's 2.2 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall was 4.3 inches, 0.4 inches above average. Rainfall was lightest to the east of Interstate 57 between Champaign and Carmyle with amounts of 2 to 3 inches, which is about 1 to 2 inches below average. Rainfall was heaviest in an area southeast of St. Louis and in far northwestern Illinois, where amounts were 6 to 9 inches. According to the National Weather Service, a cold front will push through Illinois on Saturday and Sunday, triggering rain on those days. Behind it, it will be cooler and drier. Highs on Saturday will range from the 60s in the north to the upper 70s in the south. Highs on Sunday will range from the mid to upper 60s across the state. Highs on Monday will range from the upper 60s in the north to the mid-70s in the south. Highs on Tuesday will be in the 70s, and highs on Wednesday and Thursday will be in the low to mid-80s. Potential rainfall amounts over the weekend are in the 1 to 1.5 inch range and largest in far southern Illinois. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts indicate that both temperature and precipitation are expected to be above average. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks, of course, go to Jim Angel for his Friday updates of what's been happening in the weather. Don't forget, you can always find our weathercast online twice a day, once posted in the morning and once in the afternoon. We have the best meteorologist in the world that are on the air with us each and every business day of the week, looking at agriculture not only here in Illinois and Indiana, across the Midwest, the nation, and more importantly, around the globe. It is a global agricultural world. Our weather forecast are at willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, check out all of our agricultural programming, including a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter. Dave Dickey produces that when he's here. And also the rest of the ag programming, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Commodity Week 2, that's coming up next if you listen to this radio station. Or you can find it online at willag.org. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.